A woman approaches me. She hugs me and will not let go. She starts to whisper, "Your father was a great man. He would always call me to check up on me, and he helped with my school funds." I am tempted to inform her that he had several girlfriends in various universities across Lagos. We had long since lost count. He once told me you had to feed the cow before you slaughtered it. It was the way of life. I respond with a simple, "Yes, he paid for a lot of fees." When you have money, university girls are to men what plankton is to a whale. She smiles at me, thanks me, and goes on her way. The reception is what you would expect. A couple of people we know, surrounded by people we don't remember, but at whom we smile all the same. When I have some time to myself, I go outside and place another call to the police station to ask when they will return my car. Again, they give me the brush off. If there was anything to be found, they will have found it by now. But the man on the other end of the line does not appreciate my logic. I return in time to see Auntie Taiwo on the dance floor, proving that she knows the latest steps to the latest hits. Ayola is sitting in the middle of three guys, all of them competing for her attention. Tade has already left, and these guys are hoping to replace him for good. He had tried to be supportive, to stay by her side throughout, as a man should. But Ayola was far too busy flitting this way and that, soaking in the spotlight. If he were mine, I wouldn't leave his side. I tear my eyes away from her and sip my Chapman. Maga. "Auntie, a man is here for you." Ayola is watching a movie on her laptop in my room. She could be watching it in her room, but she always seems to find her way to mine. She lifts her head to look at the house girl. I sit up immediately. It must be the police. My hands are cold. "Who is it?"
"I don't know him, ma."
Ayola shoots me a nervous look as she gets up from my bed, and I follow her out. The gentleman is seated on our sofa, and from where I stand, I can see that it is not the police and it is not Tade. The stranger holds a bouquet of roses in his hands.
"Bohega!"
She rushes down the steps and he catches her in one arm before swinging her around. They kiss. Boyega is a tall man with a protruding belly. His face is round and bearded, and his eyes are small and sharp. He also has at least 15 years more life experience than Ayola. If I squinted, I suppose I could see his attractiveness. But first I see the Bulgari watch on his wrist and the Ferragamo shoes on his feet. He looks at me.
"Hello. Boyega, this is Korde, my big sister."
"Korde, it is a pleasure to meet you. Ayola tells me how you take care of her."
"You have me at a disadvantage. I haven't heard about you at all."
Ayola laughs as if my comment were a joke, and she waves it away with a flick of her wrist.
"Boye, you should have called." "I know how you like surprises, and I just got into town."
He leans over and they kiss again. I try not to gag. He hands her the flowers, and she makes appropriate cooing sounds, even though the rose is pale in comparison to the ones at Tadis Center.
"Let me take you out."
"Okay, I'll need to get changed. Korde, will you keep Boye company?"
She has already dashed back upstairs before I can say no. Still, I set out to ignore her request and follow her up.
"So, you're a nurse,"
he says to my retreating back. I stop and sigh. "And you're married," I replied.
"What?"
"Your ring finger. The part where your ring would sit is lighter than the rest." He shakes his head and smiles.
Ayola knows.
"Yeah, I'm sure she does."
"I care about her. I want her to have the best of everything," he tells me. "I gave her the capital for her fashion business, you know, and paid for her course."
I'm surprised. She had told me she paid for it herself, from the revenue from her YouTube videos. She had even piously lectured me for my lack of business sense. The more he talks, the more I realize that I am a maga, a fool who has been taken advantage of.
Boyega is not the problem. He's just another man, another person being used by Ayola. If anything, he should be pitied.
I want to tell him how much we have in common,
though he boasts of the things he has done for her, while I begin to resent the things that I have done. In solidarity and to get him to be quiet, I offer him some cake.
Sure, I love cake. Do you have tea?
I nod. As I pass him, he winks at me.
Koride, he pauses. Hey Joe, don't spit in my tea.
I give the house girl the necessary instructions, and then cut through the kitchen and charge up the back stairs to interrogate Ayola. She's applying eyeliner to her lower lids.
What the hell's going on here?
This is why I didn't tell you. You are so judgmental.
Are you serious?
He tells me he paid for your fashion course. You said you raised the funds.
I found a sponsor, same difference.
What about Tade?
What he doesn't know won't hurt him. Besides, can you blame me for wanting a little excitement in my life?
Tade can be so boring and he is needy. I beg, I need a break.
What is wrong with you? When are you gonna stop?
Stop what?
Ayola, you better send this man on his way or I swear I'll...
You'll what?
She raises her chin and stares at me. I don't do anything. I want to threaten her, to tell her that if she doesn't listen to me, she will have to deal with the consequences of her actions by herself for once. I want to shout and scream, but I would be screaming at a wall. I storm off to my bedroom. 30 minutes later, she leaves the house with Boyega. She doesn't return till 1 a.m. I don't sleep till 1 a.m.
Father.
He often came home late, but I remember this night because he wasn't alone. There was a yellow woman on his arm. We came out of my room because Mum was screaming, and then they were on the landing. My mother was wearing a camisole and her wrapper, her usual nightwear. She never raised her voice to him, but that night she was like a banshee. Her fro was free of its bands and restraints, adding to the illusion of madness. She was Medusa, and they were statues before her. She went to wrench the woman off his arm.
Egba mi yo, shofe ba ale mi je, shofe yi mi lori ni, oluwa ko ju si mi.
She wasn't even screaming at her husband. It was the interloper whom she was mad at. I remember hissing at my mother even though there were tears in my eyes. I remember thinking how silly she looked, so worked up as he stood tall and impassive before her. He looked at his wife with indifference.
If you don't shut up now, I will deal with you, he informed her firmly.
Beside me, Ayola held her breath. He always carried out his threats. But this time my mother was oblivious. She was embroiled in a tug of war with the woman who, though she looked like an adult to me then, I now know couldn't have been older than 20. I understand now, too, that though my mother must have been aware of his indiscretions, having them take place in her home was more than she could bear.
Free me!
The girl cried, trying to retrieve her wrist from my mother's ferocious grip. Moments later, he pulled our mother off her feet by her hair and slammed her against the wall. Then he struck her face. Ayola whimpered and clutched me. The woman laughed.
See, my boyfriend will not let you touch me.
My mother slid down the wall to the ground. They stepped over her and proceeded to the bedroom. We waited till the coast was clear and then ran to help her. She was inconsolable. She wanted to be left there to cry. She howled. I had to shake her.
Mummy. Please, let's go upstairs.
The three of us slept in my room that night. The next morning, the banana-colored girl was gone, and we sat around the table for breakfast, silent, except for my father, who spoke loudly about the day ahead and congratulated his perfect wife on her excellent cooking. He wasn't sucking up. He had simply moved past the incident. It wasn't long after that that Mother began to rely on Ambien. Research. I stare at Boyega's picture on Facebook. The man who stares back is a younger, slimmer version of him. I scroll through his pictures until I'm satisfied that I know what kind of man he is. This is what I gather. One well-dressed wife and three tall boys. The first two are now schooling in England, while the third is still in secondary school here. They reside in a townhouse on Banana Island, one of the most expensive estates in Lagos. He works in oil and gas. His photos are mostly of holidays in France, the US, Dubai, etc. They are every bit the typical upper-middle-class Nigerian family. If his life is so blandly formulaic, I can see why he would be intrigued by Ayola's unattainability and spontaneity. His captions go on and on about how wonderful his wife is and how lucky he is to have her, and I wonder if his wife knows that her husband seeks out other women. She is good-looking in her own right. Even though she has birthed 3 sons and has left her youth behind, she has maintained a trim figure. Her face is expertly made up, and her outfits flatter her and do justice to the money he must spend on her upkeep. I have been calling Ayola non-stop for half a day, trying to figure out where the hell she is. She left the house early in the morning and informed my mom that she was traveling. She didn't bother to tell me. Tade has been calling me just as much, and I haven't answered. What am I to say? I have no idea where she is or what she is doing. Ayola keeps her own counsel until she needs me. The housegirl brings me a glass of cold juice while I continue my research. It's burning hot outside, so I'm spending my day off in the shadows of the house. Boyega's wife is not active on Facebook, but I find her on Instagram. Her posts about her husband and children are endless, broken up only by pictures of food and the occasional opinion of President Buhari's regime. Today's post is an old picture of herself and her husband on their wedding day. She's looking at the camera laughing, and he is looking lovingly at her. The caption says, #MCM. Okomi, heart of my heart and father of my children, I thank God for the day you laid eyes on me. I did not know then you were afraid to speak to me, but I am glad you overcame that fear. I cannot imagine what my life would have been like without you. Thank you for being the man of my dreams. Happy anniversary, B. #B. #MCEveryday. #ThrowbackThursday. #LoveIsReal. #Blessed. #Grateful. Car. The police returned my car to me at the hospital. There is nothing subtle about their black uniforms and rifles. My fingernails dig into my palms. You couldn't have returned this to my house? I hiss at them. From the corner of my eye, I see Chi-Chi sidling closer.
You better thank God we did return them at all.
He hands me a receipt, a torn piece of paper that has my license plate number, the date it was returned to me, and the amount of 5,000 naira on it. What is this for?
Logistical and transportation costs.
It is a younger one from the interview at our house, the one who has been stumbling over himself for Ayola's sake. His demeanor is not so clumsy now. I can tell he is ready for me to make a scene, armed and ready. For a second, I wish Ayola were beside me.
Excuse me?
They cannot be serious. Chi-Chi has almost reached my side. I cannot prolong this conversation. It occurs to me that they chose to drop it at my workplace for this exact reason. At home, I would have had all the power. I could simply demand that they leave my compound. Here, I am at their mercy.
Esna, the cost of driving your car to and from our office is 5,000 naira.
I bite my lip. Angering them is not in my best interests. I need them to leave before they attract more attention. Every eye on either side of the hospital doors is on me, my car, and these two geniuses. I look at my car. It is dirty, covered in dust, and I can see a food container on the back seat. I can only imagine what the boot will look like. They have soiled my entire vehicle with their filthy hands, and no amount of cleaning will remove the memory of them. But there's nothing I can do. I reach into my pocket and count 5,000 naira.
Did you find anything?
No, admits the older man.
Your car is clean.
I knew I had done a thorough job. I knew it would be clean. But hearing him say the words makes me want to weep with relief.
Good morning, officers.
Why is Chi-Chi still here? Her shift ended 30 minutes ago. They return her cheerful good morning with a hearty one of their own.
Well done, no, she tells them. I see you brought my colleague's car back.
Yes, even though we are very busy people, the younger policeman stresses. He's leaning on my car, his fat hand on my bonnet.
Well done, well done. We are grateful. She had to be managing her sister's car since.
I hand over the money. They hand over my key. Chi-Chi pretends she hasn't seen the exchange. Yes, thank you. It hurts to say this. It hurts to smile. I understand you are both very busy. Don't let me keep you. They grunt and walk away. They will probably end up hailing an Okada to take them back to their station. Beside me, Chi-Chi is practically vibrating.
Ah, now wow, what happened?
What happened to what? I head back to the hospital and Chi-Chi follows.
Why did they take your car, now? I noticed since that you did not have your car, but I thought maybe it was with the mechanic or something, but I did not think the police had it.
She tries to whisper police and fails. As we walk through the doors, so does Mrs. Rotinu. Tade is not in yet, so she will have to wait. Chi-Chi grabs my hand and drags me into the x-ray room.
So what happened?
Nothing. My car was involved in an accident. They were just checking it for insurance purposes.
And they took your car away just for that?
You know these police, always working hard. Heart. Tade looks like shit. His shirt is rumpled, he needs to shave, and his tie is askew. No singing or whistling has escaped his lips in days. This is the power Ayola has, and when I see Tade's suffering, I cannot help but be in awe of it. There is another guy, he tells me.
There is?
I'm overacting. My voice comes out as a squeak. Not that he notices. His head is down. He is half sitting on his desk with his hands on either side, gripping it tightly, so I can make out the flexing and extending, the working together, the rippling of his body. I drop the file I brought for him on the desk and reach out to touch him. His shirt is white. Not the sparkling white of the shirts Femi must have owned, or of my nurse's uniform, but the white of a distracted bachelor. I could help Tade bleach his whites if he would let me. I let my hand rest on his back and rub it. Does he find the gesture comforting? Eventually he sighs.
You're so easy to talk to, Cordy.
I can smell his cologne mixed with his sweat. The heat outside is seeping into the room and smothering the air from the AC.
I like talking to you,
I tell him. He raises his head and looks at me. We are only a step or two apart, close enough to kiss. Are his lips as soft as they appear? He gives me a gentle smile, and I smile back.
I like talking to you too. I wish...
Yes? Has he started to see that Ayala isn't right for him? He looks down again, and I can't help myself. You're better off without her, you know, I tell him softly. I feel him stiffen. What? His voice is soft, but there's something beneath it that wasn't there before. Irritation?
Why would you say that about your sister?
Tade, she hasn't exactly been. He shrugs my hand off and pushes himself up and away from the desk from me.
You're her sister. You're supposed to be on her side.
I'm always on her side. It's just that she has many sides. Not all of them are as pretty as the one that you see.
This is you being on her side, is it? She told me that you treat her like she's a monster, and I didn't believe her.
His words strike like arrows. He was my friend, mine. He sought my counsel and my company. But now he looks at me as though I were a stranger, and I hate him for it. Ayala did what she always does in the company of men, but what is his excuse? I wrap my arms around my stomach and turn my face from him so he can't see how my lips are trembling. I take it you believe her now.
I'm sure she is just grateful somebody does. It's no wonder she's always looking for attention from men.
He can barely say the last word, can barely think of Ayala in the arms of another. I laugh. I cannot help it. Ayala has won so completely, she has traveled to Dubai with Boyega, an update I got via text, and left Tade heartbroken, but somehow I am the witch. I bet she forgot to mention that she has been instrumental in the death of at least 3 men. I take a deep breath so as not to say anything I regret. Ayala is inconsiderate and selfish and reckless, but her welfare is and always has been my responsibility. From the corner of my eye, I see that sheets from the file are askance. He must have shifted them when he got up from the desk. I use a finger to pull the file toward me and I pick it up, tapping it against the surface to line the papers up. Where is the merit in telling the truth? He doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to believe anything that comes out of my mouth. He just wants her. What she needs is your support and love. Then she will be able to settle down. Why won't he shut up? The file is quaking in my hands now, and I can feel a migraine forming in a corner of my skull. He shakes his head at me. You're her older sister. You should act like it. All I've seen you do is push her away. Because of you. But I say nothing. I've lost the urge to defend myself. Was he always prone to lecturing this way? I drop the file on his table and walk past him quickly. I think I hear him call my name as I twist the doorknob, but it is drowned out by the sound of pounding in my head. The patient. Muta is sleeping peacefully, waiting for me. I slip into his room and close the door. It's because she's beautiful, you know. That's all it is. They don't really care about the rest of it. She gets a pass at life. Mutar allows me to rant. Can you imagine? He said I don't support her. I don't love her. She let him think that. She told him that after everything. I choke on my words, unable to finish them. Our silence is interrupted only by the rhythmic beeping of the monitor. I take several steadying breaths and check his chart. He is due for another bout of physiotherapy soon. So while I'm there, I might as well take him through his exercises. His body is compliant as I move his limbs this way and that. My mind replays the scene with Tade over and over, cutting parts out, zooming in on others. Love is not a weed, it cannot grow where it please. Words from yet another of Femi's poems come to me uninvited. I wonder what he would think of all this. He hadn't been with Ayola long. He would have figured her out given enough time. He was perceptive. My stomach grumbles. The heart may be broken, but the flesh needs to eat. I finish rolling Mutar's ankles, smooth down his bed sheets, and leave his room. Muhammad is mopping the floors of the corridor. The water he is using looks yellow and he hums to himself. Muhammad, change this water, I snap. He stiffens at the sound of my voice. Yes, ma. Angel of Death. How was your trip? It was fine, except he died. The glass I was drinking juice from slips out of my grip and shatters on the kitchen floor. Ayola is standing in the doorway. She has been home all of 10 minutes, and I already feel as if my world is turning upside down. He died? Yes, food poisoning, she answers, shaking her dreadlocks. She has relocked them and placed beads on the ends, so as she moves, they knock against each other and make a rattling sound. Her wrists are adorned with big gold bangles. Poison is not her style, and part of me wants to believe that this is a coincidence. I called the police. They informed his family. I crouch down to pick up some of the larger shards of glass. I think of the man's smiling wife on Instagram. Would she have the presence of mind to request an autopsy? We were in the room together, and he suddenly starts to sweat and hold his throat. Then he starts to froth at the mouth. It was so scary. But her eyes are on fire. She's telling me a tale she thinks is fascinating. I don't want to talk to her, but she seems determined to share the details. Did you try to get him help? I recall us standing over our father watching him die. And I know she did not try to get Boyga help. She watched him. Maybe she didn't poison him, but she stood aside and let nature take its course. Of course, I called the emergency operator, but they didn't get there in time. My eyes focus on the diamond comb sitting in her hair. The trip has been good to her. The Dubai air seems to have brightened her skin, and she is wearing designer clothing from top to toe. Boyega certainly wasn't stingy with his money. That's a shame. I search for a feeling greater than pity for this family man who died, but even that is sparse. I had never met Femi, but his fate affected me in a way this news does not. Yes, I'll miss him, she replies absentmindedly. Wait, I got you something. She dives into her handbag and begins rummaging when the doorbell rings. She looks up expectantly and smirks. Surely it can't be, but, you know, life. Tade walks through the door, and she flings herself into his arms. He hugs her tight, burying his head in her hair. You naughty girl, he tells her, and they kiss, passionately. I walk away quickly before he has a chance to realize that there is a third person in the room. I'd hate to have to swap banalities with him. I lock myself in my room, sit on my bed cross-legged, and stare into space. time passes. I hear a knock on my door. "Ma, are you coming down to eat?" asks the house girl as she rocks back and forth on the balls of her feet. "Who's at the dining table?"
"Mommy, Sister Ayola, and Mr. Tade."
"Who sent you to call me?"
"I came myself, Ma."
No, of course they wouldn't think of me. My mom and Ayola will be reveling in Tade's attention, and Tade will... Who cares what he will? I smile at the only person who seems to care if I have nourishment or not. From behind her small frame, laughter wafts toward me. "Thank you, but I'm not hungry." She shuts the door behind her as she leaves, shutting out the sound of happiness. At least Ayola won't be in my space for a while. I use this opportunity to Google Boyega's name. Sure enough, I find an article about his tragic passing. Nigerian dies on Dubai business trip. A Nigerian businessman died in Dubai after reportedly falling victim to a drug overdose. The Foreign Office confirmed that Boyega Tejudumi, who has been staying in the notorious royal resort, died after having taken ill in his room. Despite the efforts of the emergency services, he was pronounced dead at the scene. There was no one else involved in the accident, according to the police. I wonder how Ayola convinced the police to keep her name out of the news. I wonder at the differences between a food poisoning and a drug overdose. I wonder what the chances are that the death of a person in the company of a serial killer would come about by chance. Or perhaps the real question is, how confident am I that Ayola only uses her knife? I open other articles about Boyega's death. I take in other lies. Ayola never strikes unless provoked. But if she had a hand in Boyega's death, if she was responsible, then why did she do it? Boyega seemed infatuated. He was a cheat, but other than that, he appeared harmless. I think of Tade downstairs, smiling his signature smile and staring at Ayola as though butter could not melt in her mouth. I couldn't bear to look into Tade's eyes if he wasn't looking back at me. But haven't I done all I can to separate them? All I have to show for my trouble is judgment and scorn. I switch off my laptop. I write Boyega's name in the notebook. Birth. According to family lore, the first time I laid eyes on Ayola, I thought she was a doll. Mum cradled her before me, and I stood on my toes, pulling Mum's arm down closer to get a better look. She was tiny, barely taking up space in the hammock Mum had created with her arms. Her eyes were shut and took up half her face. She had a button nose and lips that were permanently pursed. I touched her hair. It was soft and curly. "Is she mine?" Mum laughed, her body shaking, which stirred Ayola awake. She gurgled. I stumbled backward in surprise and fell on my backside.
"Mummy, it talked! The doll talked!"
"She's not a doll, Korede. She's a baby. Your baby sister. You're a big sister now, Korede. And big sisters look after little sisters." Birthday. It's Ayola's birthday. I allow her to begin posting again on her social media pages. Updates about Femi have dwindled. Social media has forgotten his name.
"Open my present first," insists Mum.
Ayola obliges. It is tradition in our house that on a person's birthday, you open gifts from your family first thing in the morning. It took me a long time to figure out what to give her. I haven't exactly been in a giving mood. Mum's gift is a dining set for when Ayola gets married.
"I know Tade will ask soon," she announces.
"Ask what?" Ayola replies, distracted by my present. I bought her a new sewing machine. She beams at me, but I can't smile back. Mum's words are turning my stomach.
"Ask for your hand in marriage!"
Ayola screws up her nose at the prediction.
"It's time you, the both of you, start thinking about settling down."
"'Cause marriage worked so well for you."
"What did you say?"
"Nothing," I mutter. My mum eyes me, but she did not hear me, so she was forced to let it go. Ayola gets up to change for her party, and I continue blowing up balloons. We picked gray and white out of respect for Femi. Earlier, I read a poem of his on his blog.
The African sun shines brightly, burning on our backs, on our scalps, on our minds. Our anger has no cause except if the sun was a cause. Our frustrations have no root except if the sun was a root. I leave an anonymous message on the blog, suggesting that his poems be collected and made into an anthology. I hope his sister or friend comes across the message. Ayola and I don't really have friends in the traditional sense of the word. I think you have to accept someone into your confidence and vice versa to be able to call them a friend. She has minions, and I have Mutar. The minions begin to flood in around 4 p.m. The house girl lets them in, and I direct them to the food piled on the living room table. Someone puts on music, and people nibble at the snacks. But all I can think about is whether or not Tade will use this as an opportunity to try to secure Ayola forever. If I thought she loved him, I think I could be happy for them. I could, I think. But she doesn't love him, and for some reason he is blind to that fact or he doesn't care. It's 5 p.m., and Ayola hasn't come down yet. I'm wearing the quintessential black dress. It's short and has a flared skirt. Ayola said she would be wearing black too, but I am pretty sure she has changed her mind at least a dozen times by now. I resist the urge to go and check on her, even when I am asked for the 100th time where she is. I hate house parties. People forget the etiquette they would apply if they visited your house on a normal day. They leave their paper plates on any and every surface, they spill drinks and walk away, they dip their hands in snack bowls, take some and put some back, they look for places to make out. I pick up a set of paper cups that someone has left on a footstool and put it in a garbage bag. I'm just about to fetch some surface cleaner when the doorbell rings. Tade. He's wearing jeans and a white t-shirt that hugs his body and a gray blazer. I can't help but stare at him. "You look nice," he tells me. I suppose complimenting my appearance is supposed to be an olive branch. It shouldn't affect me. I've stayed out of his way. I've kept my head down. I don't want his casual compliment to touch me, but I feel a lightness inside me. I squeeze the muscles of my face to keep a smile from bursting through. "Look, Corday, I'm sorry." "Hey." The hey comes from behind me, and I turn around to see Ayola. She is wearing a fitted maxi dress, so close to the color and shade of her skin that in the dim lighting she looks almost naked, with gold earrings, gold heels, and the bracelet Tade gave her to top it off. I can detect the smattering of light gold bronzer on her skin. Tade walks past me and kisses her gently on the lips. Love or not, they are a very attractive couple, on the outside at least. He hands her a gift, and I slide closer so I can see what it is. It's a small box, but too long and too narrow to be a ring. Tade looks my way, and I make like a bee and act busy. I head back to the center of the party and start picking up paper plates again. I see flashes of Tade and Ayola throughout the night, laughing together by the punch bowl, kissing on the stairs, feeding each other cake on the dance floor until I can take it no longer. I grab a shawl from a drawer and head out of the house. It's still warm, but I wrap my arms around myself under the fabric. I need to talk to someone, anyone, someone besides Mutar. I considered therapy once, but Hollywood has revealed that therapists have a duty to break confidence if the life of the patient or someone else is at stake. I have a feeling that if I were to talk about Ayola, that confidence would be broken in 5 minutes. Isn't there an option where no one dies and Ayola doesn't have to be incarcerated? Perhaps I could see a therapist and just leave the murders out of it. I could fill plenty of sessions just talking about Tade and Ayola and how seeing them together turns me inside out. "Do you like him?" she had asked me. "No, Ayola. I love him." Head nurse. As soon as I walk into the hospital, I head to Dr. Akigbe's office, as per his email request. As usual, his email was abrupt, mysterious, designed to keep the receiver on their toes. I knock. "Come in!" His voice is like a hammer against the door. At the moment, Dr. Akigbe, St. Peter's oldest and most senior doctor, is staring at his computer screen, scrolling down with his mouse. He doesn't say anything to me, so I sit down of my own accord and wait. He stops scrolling and raises his head.
Do you know when this hospital was founded?
1971, sir. I lean back in my seat and sigh. Is it really possible that he called me here to lecture me on the hospital's history?
Excellent, excellent. I wasn't here then, of course. I'm not that old.
He laughs at his own joke. He is, of course, that old. He just happened to be working elsewhere at the time. I clear my throat in hopes of deterring him from beginning a story I have heard 1,000 times before. He stands up, revealing his full 6'3" frame and stretches. I know what he is doing. He's going to bring out the photo album. He will show me pictures of the hospital in its earliest days and of the 3 founders he can never stop talking about.
Sir, I have to touch. Dr. Tumu wants me to assist with a PET scan.
Right, right. He's still scanning the bookshelf for the album. I'm the only nurse on the floor trained to assist with a PET scan, sir, I say pointedly. Perhaps it is too much to hope my words will hurry him, but whatever he wants to say to me, I'd rather not wait an hour to hear it. To my surprise, he spins around and beams at me.
And that is why I called you here.
Sir?
I have been watching you for some time.
He demonstrates this with his forefinger and middle finger directed at his eyes and then at me.
And I like what I see. You are meticulous and you are passionate about this hospital. Frankly, you remind me of me.
He laughs again. It sounds like a dog barking. Thank you, sir. His words warm me on the inside and I smile at him. I was just doing my job, but it is gratifying to have my efforts acknowledged.
Needless to say, you are a shoo-in for the position of head nurse.
Head nurse. It's certainly a role that suits me. After all, I have been doing the work of a head nurse for some time now. Tade mentioned that I was being considered for the role, and I think of the celebratory dinner he promised we would have. That's null and void now, I guess. I don't have Tade's friendship, and Femi is probably swelling to 3 times his size, but I am now the head nurse of St. Peter's Hospital. It has a nice ring to it. I'm honored, sir. Coma. When I head to the reception desk, Chi-Chi is still hovering. Perhaps there is a man at home she is loath to return to. She is talking animatedly to a group of staff members who are barely listening. I catch the words miracle and coma. What's going on? I ask.
You haven't heard.
Heard what?
Your best friend is awake.
Awake who, Yinka?
No, Mr. Yao Tai, he's awake.
I'm running before I even think to answer. I leave Chi-Chi standing by the nurse's station and hurry to the 3rd floor. I would rather have heard the news from Dr. Akigbe, so I could have asked the pertinent neurological questions. But considering that he spied yet another opportunity to lecture on the hospital's history, it is no surprise that he failed to mention it. Or perhaps he didn't mention it because it is not true at all and Chi-Chi misunderstood. Muta's family is crowded around his bed, so I don't immediately see him. His wife, whose slender frame is carved in my memory, and a tall man who I guess is his brother, have their backs to me. They are not touching, but their bodies are leaning toward each other as if pulled together by some force. Perhaps they have been comforting each other 1 time too often. Facing the door and now me are his children. His 2 sons stand rod straight, 1 crying silently, while his daughter holds her newborn in her arms, angling the baby so her father can see. It is this gesture that finally forces me to face the reality of his consciousness. Mutar has rejoined the land of the living. I back away from the family reunion, but then I hear his voice. She is beautiful. I have never heard his voice before. When I met him, he was already in the coma, and I had imagined his voice to be rich and heavy. In reality, he hasn't spoken in months, so his voice is high-pitched, weak, almost a whisper. I turn and bump into Tade.
Whoa, he says.
He stumbles backward and catches himself. Hey, I say distracted,
my mind still back in Mutar's room. Tade looks over my shoulder at the scene.
So, Mr. Mutar is awake.
Yeah, it's great, I manage. I'm sure it is thanks to you.
Mike.
You kept the guy going. He was never forgotten, never neglected. He doesn't know that.
Maybe not, but you can't anticipate what stimuli the brain will respond to.
Yes.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks. I wait, but he makes no mention of his promise that we would celebrate the promotion. I sidestep him and continue down the corridor. Just as I return to reception, there is a scream. The waiting patients look around themselves in surprise while Yinka and I run toward the sound. It's coming from room 105. Yinka flings open the door and we burst in to find Asibi and Gingbe locked together. Gingbe has Asibi in a headlock and Asibi is clawing at Gingbe's breast. They freeze when they see us. Yinka begins to laugh.
Yeah!
She cries after the laughter is gone from her. Thank you, Yinka, I say pointedly. She stands there still grinning. Thank you, I say again. The last thing I need is Yinka adding fuel to an already raging flame.
What?
I can handle it from here. For a moment, I think she's going to argue, but then she shrugs.
Fine,
she mutters. She takes one more look at Asibi and Gingbe, smirks, then flounces from the room. I clear my throat. You send over there, you send over there. When they have taken their places far away from each other, I remind them that this is a hospital and not a bar by the side of the road. I should have you both fired.
No, ma. Please, ma.
Explain to me what is so serious that you had to fight physically. They don't respond. I'm waiting.
It's Gingbe. She has been trying to steal my boyfriend.
Oh,
Mohammed is not your boyfriend.
Mohammed? Seriously? Perhaps I should have left Yinka to handle this. Now that I think of it, she probably guessed what was going on. Mohammed is a terrible cleaner with poor personal hygiene, and yet he has somehow gotten these two women to fall for him, creating drama inside the hospital. He should really be fired. I would not miss him. I don't care whose boyfriend Mohammed is. You people can eye each other from afar or burn each other's houses down, but when you enter this hospital, you will behave in a professional manner or risk your jobs. Do you understand? They mumble something that sounds like, shingle shade bish. Do you understand?
Yes, ma.
Excellent. Please get back to work. When I return to reception, I find Yinka leaning back, eyes closed, mouth open.
Yinka!
I slam a clipboard down on the countertop, startling her awake. If I catch you sleeping again, I will write you up.
Who died and made you head nurse?
Actually, mutters Bumi, they promoted her this morning.
What?
There will be a meeting about it later in the day, I add. Yinka doesn't speak. The game. It's raining. The sort of rain that wrecks umbrellas and renders a raincoat useless. We are stuck in the house, Ayola, Tade, and I. I try to avoid them, but Ayola collars me as I walk through the living room.
Let's play a game!
Tade and I sigh. Count me out, I say.
Why don't we play? Just the two of us,
Tade suggests to Ayola. I ignore the stab to my heart.
No! It's a three or more person game. It has to be all of us or none of us. We can play checkers or chess.
No, I want to play Cluedo.
If I were Tade,
I tell her to stuff the Cluedo up her entitled behind.
I'll go get it.
She jumps up and leaves Tade and me in the room together. I don't want to look at him, so I stare out the window at the washed out scenery. The streets in the estate are empty. Everyone has taken refuge indoors. In the Western world, you can walk or dance in the rain, but here, the rain will drown you.
I may have been a bit harsh the other day, he says.
He waits for me to respond, but I can think of nothing to say.
I've been told sisters can be very mean to one another.
Who told you that?
Ayola.
I want to laugh, but it comes out like a squeak. She really looks up to you, you know. I finally look at him. I look into his innocent light brown doe eyes, and I wonder if I was ever like that, if I ever had that kind of innocence. He is so wonderfully normal and naive. Maybe his naivete is as alluring to Ayola as it is to me. I suppose ours was beaten out of us. I open my mouth to answer, and Ayola hops back onto the couch. She's holding the board game close to her chest. His eyes forget me and focus on her. Tade, have you ever played before?
No.
Okay, you play to find out who the murderer was, in what room the murder took place, and with what weapon. Whoever figures it out first wins.
She passes the rule book to him and winks at me.
17. Ayola was 17 the first time and scared out of her wits. She called me and I could barely make sense of her words.
You what?
The knife, there's blood everywhere.
Her teeth were chattering as though she were cold. I tried to control my rising panic.
Ayola, slow down. Take a deep breath. Where are you bleeding?
I'm not.
Somto. It's Somto.
You were attacked?
Where are you? I called. No! Come alone!
Ayola, where are you? Will you come alone?
I'm not a doctor. I won't tell you unless you promise to come alone.
So I promised. When I got to the apartment, Somto was already dead. His trousers were around his ankles, and the shock his face mirrored mine.
You did this?
Back then, I was too scared to hang about and clean, so we torched the room. I never even considered putting Ayola at the mercy of the police. Why take the risk that her cry of self-defense might go unheard?
Somto had a studio apartment to himself that overlooked the water. The very water that led into the third mainland bridge lagoon. We took the diesel he was keeping for his generator, poured it over his body, lit a match and fled. The other tenants ran out of the block quickly when the fire alarm went off, so there was no collateral damage.
Somto was a smoker. It was all the proof the university needed. Murderer? Ayola. Place? Studio apartment. Weapon? Knife.
Man-eater. Ayola wins Cluedo, but only because I am forced to keep explaining the rules to Tade to prevent him from falling into the traps she is so adept at setting. I had convinced myself that if Tade could win here, then maybe...
You're a pro at this, he tells her, squeezing her thigh.
Hey, I'm hungry. I wouldn't mind some of that cake. Do you have any left?
Ask Cordina.
Oh, Corde bakes too?
She raises her eyebrows and glances at me. I meet her eyes and wait.
You think I bake?
Yes, I had your pineapple upside down cake.
Did Corde tell you I baked that?
He frowns.
Yes. Wait, no. It was your mom.
She smiles at him, as if sorry that he was deceived.
I can't bake to save my life. She states plainly. Corde made apple crumble this morning. Would you like that?
Oh, okay, sure.
Ayola calls for the house girl and tells her to bring the apple crumble with custard and side plates. 5 minutes later, she is dishing out hefty portions. I push mine away, feeling nauseous. Tade takes a bite of his, closes his eyes and smiles.
Corde, this is heavenly.
Awake. I haven't gone to Mutar's room since he came out of his coma. It's the end of that era. I can no longer talk to him with impunity, and I was not the nurse allocated to attend to him in the first place.
Corde.
Hmm?
The patient in room 313 would like to see you.
Mutar, why?
Chichi shrugs.
Better go and ask him.
I consider ignoring the summons, but he'll soon be walking around the floor as part of his physiotherapy, so I know it is only a matter of time before I see him. I knock on his door.
Come in.
He's sitting up in bed with a book in his hands, which he sets down beside him. He looks at me expectantly. There are heavy rings around his eyes, but his pupils are focused and sharp. He seems to have aged since he woke up. I'm Neskorde. His eyes widen.
You're the one.
The one?
The one who visited me.
Oh, they told you.
Who?
The nurses.
The nurses.
No, I remember. You remember what? The room is cold. My hands are tingling. The temperature dropping.
I remember your voice. You talking to me.
My skin is dark, but I am certain all the blood has rushed to my feet, rendering me ghost-like. What happened to all that research that established the unlikelihood that comatose patients were aware of their surroundings? Yes, Tade had been convinced that my visits were doing some good, but I had never thought Mutar could actually hear me. You remember me talking to you?
Yes.
Do you remember what I said? Market. When I was 10, my mom lost me in the market. We went to buy tomatoes, bitter leaf, crayfish, onions, atarudu, tatashe, plantain, rice, chicken, and beef. I was holding the list, but I had already memorized everything, and I chanted it under my breath. Mom was holding Ayola's hand, and I walked behind them. My eyes were focused on my mother's back, so I wouldn't lose them in the sea of people pushing and shoving their way between the stalls. Ayola saw something, a lizard perhaps, and decided to chase it. She pulled her hand from my mother's grip and ran. My mother, acting on instinct, ran after her. It took me a second to react. At the time, I didn't know Ayola had run off. 1 minute my mother was walking quickly and steadily in front of me. The next, she was hightailing it away without me. I tried to follow, but I lost her immediately and stopped running. Suddenly, I was in an unfamiliar place, surrounded by threatening strangers. I feel now much the way I felt then. Uncertain, afraid, and very sure that something bad is going to happen to me. Memory. Mutar frowns, knitting together his brows, and then he shrugs.
He's very patchy.
What do you remember? Would you like to sit down? He gestures at a seat and I oblige. I need to keep him talking. I told this man almost every secret I had, convinced that he would take those secrets to the grave. But now he's giving me a shy smile and trying to meet my eye.
Why did you do it?
Do what? I ask. But I don't recognize my voice.
Visit me. You don't know me, and I get the impression the visits from my family had dwindled to almost nothing.
It was tough for them, seeing you like that.
You don't have to make excuses for them.
We are both silent after that, not sure what to say.
I have a granddaughter now.
Congratulations.
The father says she isn't his.
Oh, curious. Are you married?
No.
Good. Marriage isn't what they say it is.
You were saying you remembered something.
Yes. It's amazing, isn't it? You think the whole body is in hibernation, but the brain is still working, still garnering information. Really fascinating.
Mutar is far more talkative than I thought he would be, and he gestures quite wildly when he talks. I can imagine him in front of a room full of youths, lecturing them on things they couldn't care less about, but going at it with passion and gusto.
So you remember a lot then?
No, not a lot. I know you like popcorn with syrup. You said I should try it sometime.
My breath catches in my throat. No one else here would know that except Tade. And Tade isn't one to play tricks.
Is that all? I ask quietly.
You seem nervous. Are you okay?
I'm fine. I have some water here if you...
Really, I'm okay. Is there anything else?
He appraises me, cocking his head.
Oh, yes. I recall you saying that your sister is a serial killer.
Madness. What led me to confide in a body that still had breath left in it? An unwanted thought enters my mind, a means to an end. I squash the thought, meet his gaze, and laugh. Who did I say she killed?
I don't quite remember that.
Well, it's to be expected. Coma patients usually have a hard time separating their dream world from the real world.
He nods.
I was thinking the same thing. He doesn't seem convinced, though. Or perhaps my fear is making me read too much into his tone of voice. He's still staring at me, trying to make sense of things. I have to remain professional. Have you been experiencing any headaches?
No, I haven't.
Good. Finding it hard to sleep?
Sometimes.
Well, if you begin to suffer hallucinations...
Hallucinations?
Don't be alarmed. Just let the doctor know.
He looks alarmed, and I feel a little guilty.
I stand up. Rest, and if you need anything, press the button beside you.
Would you mind staying a bit longer?
You have a pleasant voice. His face is narrow and stiff. His eyes are the most expressive thing about him. I stand, pushing the chair back in its corner, and his eyes follow me as I move around straightening things that are already in their place. They put me on edge.
Sorry, sir, I have to return to work.
Aren't you working by being here? I'm not the nurse designated to care for you. I force a smile and pretend to glance at his notes and then head to the door.
I'm glad you're feeling better, Mr. Yao Tai, I say, and leave the room.
3 hours later, Bumi informs me that Mutar has requested me as his nurse.
Yinga, who is his nurse, shrugs, not caring one chit. He has creepy eyes anyway.
To whom did he make the request? I ask.
Doctor, put the patient first,
Dr. Akigbe. The chance that Dr. Akigbe will allow Mutar's request is very, very high. He loves to grant patients requests that require nothing from him. I sink into the chair at the reception desk and consider my options, but none of them are ideal. I imagine writing his name in the notebook. I wonder if this is how it is for Ayola. 1 minute she is giddy with happiness and good cheer, and the next minute her mind is filled with murderous intent.
Asleep.
I dream of Femi. Not the inanimate Femi, the Femi whose smile was plastered all over Instagram and whose poetry is memorialized in my mind. I've been trying to understand how he became a victim. He was arrogant, there's no doubt about that. But handsome, talented men usually are. His tone on his blog was abrupt and cynical, and he didn't appear to suffer fools lightly. But as though at war with himself, his poetry was playful and romantic. He was complex. The sort of man who shouldn't have fallen under Ayola's spell. In my dream, he leans back into his chair and asks me what I'm going to do.
Do about what?
She's not going to stop, you know.
She's defending herself.
You don't really believe that, he chides, shaking his head feebly. He stands up and starts to walk away from me. I follow him, because what else can I do? I want to wake up, but I also want to see where Femi will take me. It turns out he wants to visit the place where he died. We stare at his body, the utter helplessness of it all. Beside him on the floor is the knife she carries with her and spills blood with. She had hidden it before I got there, but in my dream, I see it as clear as day. He asks me if he could have done anything differently.
You could have seen her for what she was.
Ice cream. Her name is Peju. She's hovering outside our compound and makes her move the moment I pull out of the gate. I don't immediately recognize her, but I stick my head out of the window to see what she wants.
What did you do to him?
Sorry?
Femi, what did you do to Femi?
I realize then who she is. I have seen her too many times to count on Instagram. She's the one who has been posting about Femi, the one who called Ayola out on Snapchat. She has lost a lot of weight and her pretty eyes are red. I try to remain impassive.
I can't help you.
Can't or won't?
I just want to know what happened to him.
I attempt to drive on, but she opens my door.
The worst thing is not knowing.
Her voice breaks. I turn off